Thank you. You can see what an effective team we are. We're dependent upon each other. But I really appreciate Dr. Lurie's leadership on the issue of science preparedness. And you'll hear some themes repeated in my presentation, but I am really pleased to be part of the team at HHS that has been working on this issue. I'm Sam Grossklaus. I'm with the Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response at CDC. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose for this presentation, and then we always have to have a disclaimer that the information I'm going to be presenting doesn't represent an official CDC policy, but just the author's thoughts. What I hope to do today is focus more on sort of the participation of public health and how public health response or practice can intersect with the type of scientific research that you just heard about. I want to emphasize that public health practice is not research. We can learn a lot by conducting public health practice to fill knowledge gaps, but I think as Dr. Lurie pointed out, there are many knowledge gaps that are not filled by routine public health practice, and as a result, we need to consider what priority research issues need to be addressed that may only be able to be addressed during a response period. And the priorities that we have to keep our eye on during response, of course, are our need to decrease morbidity and mortality and to initiate community recovery as soon as possible. Yet, at the same time, we should focus on learning both for the current response period and also for future events that we might be able to respond more effectively to if we can learn from the current event. And finally, that these emergency settings, again, provide sort of unique opportunities for us to learn, and therefore all the issues that Dr. Lurie talked about need to be thought about ahead of time as much as possible. We need to have relationships with individuals that we can work with to try to answer these questions. We need to be prepared to address them. So CDC's role in general is to support local and state response. As you know, local and state public health, healthcare, and emergency management agencies are really the first responders during emergencies. They are the folks on the ground responding to the community's needs. And so CDC typically supports local and state efforts. That's our role. And in two general categories, it's about rapidly mobilizing and generating data and information and then generating knowledge that can inform decision making about the response or actually providing human and material resources for the response. And I'm going to focus more on this issue about capturing data, information, and generating knowledge today. So the knowledge base, again, for emergency preparedness and response can be generated, again, by both public health practice and public health research. The types of activities that public health departments typically do, as many of you do, include public health surveillance that's routine. Sometimes it's enhanced during an emergency response. Also, health services monitoring is a component of that. Epidemiologic investigations to look at risk factors that may be associated with the exposure to the hazard or the event. Both environmental and hazard monitoring are ongoing, and these are all done as public health practice, and I'll characterize public health practice and public health research and try to differentiate those in a moment. Health assessments of the community, risk assessments of the community are included, and then evaluation of either programmatic activities or interventions would be included as sort of routine public health practice that is not considered research. Research, then, is the systematic approach to generating generalizable knowledge. So some of the characteristics of public health practice, it's typically characterized by the collection and analysis of identifiable health data, and that, again, is typically done at the local and state level. It's conducted by definition by a public health authority, and its purpose is to protect the health of a particular community. In this situation, the risks and the benefits of capturing this information primarily are designed to accrue to the participating community. They are applied to the community in which the practice is being conducted. In contrast, public health research is typically more systematic. collection analysis of additional of identifiable information. It also is typically either conducted primarily by or in collaboration with a public health authority, but governmental, academic, or private sector partners may also contribute to that activity. And the purpose in this situation, as opposed to practice, is generating knowledge that may benefit those beyond the participating community who actually bear the risk of participation. So again, it's this generalizable knowledge concept. Additional differentiation, if we think about how the information that is derived from this activity is going to be used, is it going to be actionable during the response itself? Well, by definition, practice, public health practice activities would capture information that is actionable. Research may or may not, as Dr. Lurie said, I mean, ideally we're there during a response and can capture information and then inform the response at that time. And that's what our scientific preparedness activities are all about, to be more facile and quicker in getting out into the field. The nature of the interventions in each situation, typically for the practice, practice-based interventions, they're typically standard, accepted, and proven practices, as opposed to research, which might be non-standard. In other words, we're comparing a novel intervention, perhaps, with standard practice and determining which might be most effective. I and others think about the type of research that we can do for preparedness and response in three categories. The first category I would characterize as key research questions that can be answered now, in other words, outside of an emergency response situation. One example of that that I highlight here is work that CDC funded through its Preparedness and Emergency Response Research Centers. That work was initiated in 2008 and is just being completed. The topics that were addressed during that research activity are listed here: enhancing the usefulness of pain, improving risk communications, creating sustainable public health and preparedness and response systems, and then generating metrics for the effectiveness and efficiency of our public health system. And this particular research initiative took a public health systems and services research approach in particular. I highlight there that some of the findings were just published in a journal supplement in Public Health Reports, the November-December issue, but the researchers themselves have published over 100, 150 publications over that 5 or 6 year period. Just an aside, it is now incumbent upon us to ensure that that research is now translated into practice, which is something that I don't think we're going to be addressing as much today, but it's a current focus of ours, is to focus on implementation research and how we can really adapt what we learned to the practice community. The second two categories of preparedness research that I'll highlight, and Dr. Lurie alluded to this, protocols for predictable events that occur during response. I mean, during a flu outbreak or whatever, we sort of know what to anticipate. So we're always going to be looking at antiviral effectiveness if you have a novel influenza strain. And in fact, our influenza group has established contracts to look at issues, clinical issues, and the community health issues as well, to try to estimate secondary transmission risk, the effectiveness of full or partial antiviral therapy use, and looking at disease severity and so forth, because we know we're going to need to understand that information as we try to intervene against flu. Also, effectiveness of non-pharmaceutical interventions. Often we consider whether we should close schools during some infectious disease outbreaks, and we need to assess whether that is in fact an effective intervention and under what circumstances is it effective. Or sheltering in place or evacuation during natural disasters. How do we make those decisions, and when do we make those decisions? Effectiveness of mold mitigation. This issue came up again during our response to Hurricane Sandy. I mean, we always know that buildings get wet during hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding. And how do we mitigate that in buildings? How do we know that it's now safe for folks to go back into their homes or their businesses? So we can look at those issues, and we know that we're going to need to during those types of events. And then finally, this issue of protocols for the unpredictable. For example, now with Ebola, we are recommending active and direct active monitoring of persons who may be at risk. Is that what is the effectiveness of that intervention, and under what circumstances might it be effective? Or the effectiveness of personal protective equipment for, you know, novel agents or unique hazards, and others may be speaking about this as well. And Dr. Lurie had a very similar list, I think, of the issues that we need to address with respect to research. And I would just highlight this, and largely from, I think, a public health systems and public health agency standpoint, I mean, we need public health agencies to think in terms of information needs beyond public health practice, and to partner with, whether it's academics or government or private sector, during that response. They're typically overwhelmed with the response, but ideally we might have an ability to develop a complementary capacity to be able to support research during a response. And for that, again, of course, we certainly want local and state input. And during the meetings that Dr. Lurie described, where we have gotten the community together shortly after an event has occurred, we always try to get information and input from a number of communities, including the community, so that the questions are considered and prioritized. Because, again, our resources are tight. We can, as Dr. Lurie alluded to, think about questions ahead of time, think about them in terms of different hazard scenarios that we know are going to occur, and have pre-configured protocols and networks, and also meet potential research partners in our community, whether those are schools, academic centers in our community, or others who might be able to partner with us. Ideally, you know, we meet these individuals and develop a relationship before we are in the midst of a response. So factors, again, to consider. Again, our priority during an emergency is always about decreasing disability, injury, infection, mortality, and initiating recovery as soon as possible. But we have to think about how can we best make use of the limited resources we have? And so is the research question that we are considering, is it really a priority knowledge gap? And ideally, that's where we devote our resources, to those knowledge gaps that have the might contribute to knowledge at the highest level. Can the questions be answered in some other way? In other words, could the practice, public health practice activities actually answer that question? Or could we defer that question to a time outside of the response and you know, get adequate information? Is there sufficient scientific validity to the hypothesis that we've generated? Are we actually likely to answer the question that we think we are posing? And then our ability to actually answer the research question, is the sample size large enough? You know, are enough people affected that we can derive information and try to come to some conclusion, or can we access them adequately during the response? And then is it safe for those who might be conducting the research to actually go into the community at the time to capture that information? So there are a large number of questions that we have to consider before we devote time and energy to this. But I think you know, the point is that and it's made here, is that we really have to acknowledge that public health practice itself is not going to address all of our knowledge gaps, that research is going to be necessary. Dr. Lurie also mentioned this issue of trying to consider a scientific response section in your incident management system. We have done this at CDC. We actually, and largely perhaps it's the luxury of not being on the front lines, but we have restructured our incident management system so that we know that we have to answer key questions to guide the response itself. And then I think the additional piece here is that we think about questions that can't be answered by public health practice, and for that we would need to conduct research. Pre-event, as I said earlier, try to identify your research partners. And then Several examples Dr. Lurie gave suggest that we need to identify persons at risk during the event and as soon as possible during the event or pre-event. For example, if we know emergency responders are always going to be responding, you know, roster these individuals and perhaps even get baseline health information on them. There are also volunteers that we have to consider, and then the community itself. And so as soon as we can, we need to consider trying to identify these individuals because we may want to follow them for a longer term, and I think Dr. Miller is going to be talking a bit about that. I'm just highlighting here that National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health at CDC has actually convened a group to develop consensus guidelines about how one can do monitoring and rostering, and they have guidelines out on emergency response health monitoring system and are working on some software applications to support that. And so in closing, I'd just like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. John Decker and Sarah Vaghi, and I've cited a couple of publications there that, again, sort of differentiate this public health research from public health practice or non-research. I thank you very much, and I think Dr. Miller is next. And I'm going to walk away. Come, please.